You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Folks, Mother's Day is around the corner, and let me talk to you about 1-800-Flowers. I can't wait. Every year, it's a tradition. I send stuff to my mother, my mother-in-law, and my wife because they are three amazing moms. They're better than all your moms out there. You think you have good moms? No, I have good moms in my life. I'm just kidding. This was a little harsh. I'm sure you guys all have good moms too. From your mom to the mother of your children and all the moms in between, this Mother's Day, give back to the ones that have given you everything. 1-800-Flowers helps you celebrate all amazing moms, from homemade bouquets, sweet treats, gourmet food, and one-of-a-kind gifts, ordered easily and delivered fresh. For a limited time, you can save up to 40% off Mother's Day bestsellers at 1-800-Flowers.com/Dan. Don't wait. Order today and save up to 40% at 1-800-Flowers.com/Dan.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family-owned from the start, same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becle, SAB, the CV. Copyright 2024, Proximo. Jersey City, New Jersey, please drink responsibly.
This is the Dan Le Batard Show with the Stugatz Podcast.
So Dominique is already exasperated by the Aaron Rodgers topic that I wanted to bring in, which I do understand.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
So I agree, by the way. I agree that that's a reasonable response to this. It's funny how this played out because before all of this stuff happened this week, which, by the way, I guess we should say that this happened this week.
In 2013, when CNN's Pamela Brown was covering the Kentucky Derby, she was introduced to Rodgers. Hearing that she was a journalist at CNN, Rodgers began attacking the news media for, quote, covering up important stories. Rodgers then brought up the Sandy Hook shooting and said the news media was intentionally ignoring that the shooting wasn't real, that it was a government inside job. I remind you, the shooting, of course, was very real, very tragic. 20 children and 6 adults were murdered that day. When Pamela Brown asked Aaron Rodgers for evidence of what he was talking about, Rodgers then began sharing various theories that have been disproven numerous times by evidence. Rodgers falsely claimed to Pamela Brown that there were men in black in the woods by the school, and he asked if she thought that was odd. Brown says that she found the entire encounter disturbing.
And then, like, minutes before we sat down here, Aaron Rodgers tweeted out his first comments after everybody, of course, started talking about this. Because, by the way, I guess I'm backing into a lead here, which is that Aaron Rodgers is one of the two top contenders to be RFK Jr.'s vice president.
Sure.
He says this, quote, "As I am on the record saying in the past, what happened in Sandy Hook was an absolute tragedy. I am not and have never been of the opinion that the events did not take place. Again, I hope that we learn from this and other tragedies to identify the signs that will allow us to prevent unnecessary loss of life. My thoughts and prayers continue to remain with the families affected, along with the entire Sandy Hook community." Heart emoji, hashtag thing. So that happened after I wanted to do a thing about Aaron Rodgers. But your first reaction, I guess, to Aaron Rodgers now saying, clarifying, actually, no, have never believed the thing that now CNN has accused me of saying to their reporters.
I want you to read it again, because it sounds like, based on what he told Pamela Brown, he says a thing happened. He just thinks the thing was some conspiracy.
Oh, you see an immunized...
This feels
legal.
Yeah.
So this is what he says. It's a good point. "I am not and have never been of the opinion that the events did not take place." And then he hopes that we learn from this and other tragedies to prevent unnecessary loss of life, et cetera, et cetera. So it's an absolute tragedy. The events did not take place is not a thing he believes. And so, look, we're just doing the thing again, Dominique, which I guess is why Dominique was exasperated when he sat down. And I was like, I think I have Aaron Rodgers takes.
I don't like talking about any of this stuff. I know we need to. I think the interesting thing for me was when we first found out he was going to potentially be the running mate of RFK, is that we all joked about it.
Yes.
Yeah. And it was like, we joked one other time about a candidate. and it ain't turned out so great. And so I guess it just wasn't, and I guess this feels a little bit more far-fetched or whatever, or does it? I don't know. It's just an uncomfortable place to be in, and also just generally just kind of embarrassed that he, and this is before we even get to the Sandy Hook stuff.
Exactly.
It's just like, what are we doing?
Yeah, the New York Times reports this, and it's immediately like, oh, we're doing this now.
Right.
We're doing the thing where Aaron Rodgers is in our discourse in a way that dares us to take him seriously. And so the serious part, incidentally, is when people begin to do exactly that, and they're like, now, officially, you know, reporting stuff, the political press is, in ways that reveal that actually Aaron Rodgers' whole persecution complex with the sports media is actually nothing compared to what would happen actually if he was a real candidate being vetted by all sorts of political campaigns.
Right. Well, yeah. He's definitely in a world where he's insulated because he has a perceived value. And in a weird way, probably getting injured was the best thing to happen for him because it only gave another year for that value to kind of increase because people were like, yeah, maybe he's going to come back and save the Jets. And it's just for a guy who probably loves attention more than he loves winning championships, he is getting it. And that's what it seems like. It seems like, yeah, this is a guy who constantly wants attention. And there's no world in which, A, if RFK were a candidate that were taken seriously, and then RFK were to win, there's no way that Aaron Rodgers would be content having to be a politician and having to, and not just having to be a politician, having to be a vice president. Like, that's basically
the Nathaniel Hackett of politicians.
I was going to say it's backing up Brett Favre. It's, you know, it's that thing of like, oh yeah, no, this is a person who wants the spotlight at every turn. And for anyone who's in his life when he retires, woof, I hope, you know, get him interested in golf.
I get excited, I think, when we get an opportunity in sports to take on some real things. And it's yes. happened more and more recently. And I kind of feel like, yeah, this, like, the other stuff is fun, but we actually get an opportunity to talk to people who are outside of our whatever bubbles we live in through sports, because there are lots of people from all different political spectrums who are willing to listen to me who would not turn on or read the same things that I read. And I think that's what I was trying to investigate my exasperation because, like, oh, I mean, it's not really affecting me. Why does this stress me out so much? And then it hit me that, like, I should be excited because this is my opportunity. But I think more than anything, it's just reinforcing that I don't know how much progress, if any, has been made. I don't know where we are going. And I also don't know what to do because I don't know what to do or say. Because through COVID and whatever racial reckoning or whatever we called it, that period.
There it is. Love a reckoning.
Oh, man. It was one of the happiest stretches of my life. White people was listening.
You're getting phone calls.
Oh, I was getting random phone calls.
Apologizing.
Like, hey, you know all this racism shit? My bad, dog. That's all I wanted. And then, like, through the campaign of Donald Trump and through his presidency, like, we're all finding ways to do whatever part we can, and you, like, convince yourself that you're actually, like, taking some risk and making some progress. And then we get out of it and it's like, hey, you know what? Is anything that much better? Is anything that much worse? And that's what I think I was confronted with, was like, now how do I handle this in a way? Because I made mistakes through those stretches. I have regrets on things that I said and things that I did. But by
you
and
went
large,
hard in on Aaron Rodgers, as lots of us did, and right. then you sort of modulated, being like, okay,
yeah, because I mean, I like that don't get you anywhere. And so I think that's what was stressing me out, is like, how do I handle this? Because it's absurd, and like making fun of it is fine, but like, what do you actually say about it if it's real? I don't know.
But maybe do you think on some level it's the absurdity of it? Because when I think about what you're talking about as having this platform to be able to maybe engage in different conversations with people who are sports fans and getting them to kind of open their mind and be empathetic to a different perspective. When you say that, I think about people like, you know, when Greg Popovich and Steve Kerr and Doc Rivers were during, you know, 2020 talking about, you know, police violence. I think about when Karl Anthony Towns was talking about how COVID impacted him. And those are real things that feel like pegs that you can talk about where you can say, okay, to any COVID deniers, here is a basketball player that you potentially root for, and he just lost his mother. And that to me feels like it's much easier to peg a story around that than the absurdity that Aaron Rodgers often exists in, whether it is he may be the vice president, the vice presidential candidate for a third party candidate, or his claims on COVID or his Joe Rogan appearances, they're all in the theater of the absurd.
Yeah, but I think so around COVID stuff, like the message is simple. Get vaccinated or stay home. The tough thing about this is like, what is the message that celebrities shouldn't be politicians, like, or Aaron Rodgers shouldn't be taken seriously? And I think that's what I was having a hard time with is like, I don't want to say he shouldn't be taken seriously because we thought that at once upon a time. He should be taken seriously. But I also know that if I say, you know what, don't vote for Aaron Rodgers, like, that's not the right thing to do either. That's not going to be properly
received.
So
you're endorsing Aaron Rodgers.
Can you Photoshop that image?
My gosh. You know how to get me to never come on this show again.
But can I say that the reason I was interested in Aaron Rodgers and the reason why I was interested in him before even the Sandy Hook stuff, which he says or is trying to make us think he does not believe now, at least, is because he is kind of like this one-man like Overton window, right? This guy who is a line at which I guess we have to figure out, are we just going to let this guy just say stuff and not take it seriously anymore? It's this line where it's like, oh, what is the line beyond which we need to say with like some amount of seriousness, this is f***ed up and you shouldn't be taken seriously?
Well, that's where even with his statement doesn't actually respond to CNN's claims. His statement doesn't respond to those conversations. He's just saying, I never said that. And it feels like, okay, well then somebody needs to hold his feet to the fire and say, why would this person say that the interaction they had with you at the Kentucky Derby was different than like
he's actually even not saying I didn't say that. He is saying, as I'm on the record saying in the past, what happened in Sandy Hook was an absolute tragedy. I am not, have never been of the opinion that the events did not take place.
Yeah.
And then he goes on to say that it's,
I just had a lot
tragic
of mint juleps at the Derby and got loose.
But I think the question of Aaron Rodgers, it gets to like, do we find him interesting enough to wonder how he got this way? And so what is funny to me about this, beyond the fact that RFK Jr. turns out in, I guess, leaking, his two top vice presidential candidates are Jesse Ventura and Aaron Rodgers, that he's really, really cornering the f***ing, you know, Democrats, former Democrats who believe in 9/11 conspiracy market, right? Beyond that, it's Aaron Rodgers went on this 3-hour paywalled podcast that I had Ryan Cortez listen to.
I am sorry, Ryan.
Yeah,
because I got a text from
actionable
somebody.
Actionable legally, Ryan. Yeah. You should call a lawyer.
Unless you just became red-pilled.
Cortez will eat garbage when it comes to television and love it. And this was like something he actually pushed back on, and I made him do it. And
that is Exhibit A. That little clip of audio clip that Cortez, that is Exhibit A in your lawsuit.
It was 3 hours long, and he sent me a long, embittered summary of what he found out. But I want to play one of the clips because it proves that, A, this guy, Eddie Bravo, is a real person. I thought this might be a satire of like an Aaron Rodgers podcast episode that doesn't exist. But it turns out it exists, and Rodgers said stuff like this.
Tartaria is interesting to me because I just don't have a natural skepticism paired with a true curiosity about about history. I studied history in college. When I was 9 years old, I studied Egypt. And that's why I'm so fascinated by Graham Hancock and Randall Carlson and their theories about Egypt. I love their podcast with Joe. And why does that history matter? Because there's been probably thousands and thousands and thousands and tens and hundreds of thousands, maybe, years of extremely advanced civilizations. Why does that change things? Because everything that they've told us could be a lie.
And so Eddie Bravo is like a QAnon adjacent guy, it seems. The theory they're talking about is the Tartarian Empire, which is billed, according to Bloomberg, as the QAnon of architecture. And it also proceeds, if we have that video of Roger saying his origin story about like how he started questioning things, it gets back to RFK Jr. if we have that clip.
My thing on politics is I've always thought it's a f-ing sham because the majority of them are all juiced in. And the rule, and it's run by the big banks, the big pharma, the lobbyists, the big everything, right? That doesn't give a shit deep down about the American people. All they care about is profits, power, and control, right? So my antidote to that is RFK Jr. Because I think, although he has the pedigree of family being in politics, the last real president was the first president I studied, which was JFK. And that's what got me into questioning things because I did a sophomore project on JFK, life and death.
For a guy who doesn't believe in vaccines, it's weird that he would call RFK the antidote.
But I play all of this to point out that there are some things where it's like, hey, Aaron Rodgers, you're not a problem if what you believe is the pharmaceutical industry is a problem. Cool. I agree. It is. There are many, many issues with big pharma. If your whole take here is that like we should do more psychedelic drugs, also on board. Cool. Let's talk about that. If he's even like anti-mainstream media, like, okay, I'll hear you out on that. If it's a JFK conspiracy thing, I'm like not scandalized by this. But the question is, where is the line? And I feel like the line is somewhere around the QAnon of architecture and Sandy Hook trutherism. And he's clearly on the other side of a line that just feels like we should say, the issue with you as a candidate is that you believe some shit that's just actually deranged.
How the human mind works is still a mystery to a lot of us in many ways, or maybe to all of us in many ways.
Not me.
Except for Wyatt. However, and correct me if I'm wrong, it feels to me like I'm going to use this sports car analogy. Is it feels like Aaron has a sports car, like in his head, as far as like horsepower is concerned, but he's a drunk driver. Like it's just like, it just feels like because, and
you should not be trusted,
right? And
to drive this country
or just himself, you know? So like, I'm hesitant to say that he's smart. And smart's such a like loaded word because it like oversimplifies intelligence. Like you're either smart or you're not. You can be intelligent in a bunch of different ways. But for the sake of this conversation, it's clear to me that he has some like above average level of like brain power. But where he chooses to focus it and what he does with it is the concerning part. The other question that comes up to me is you talk about the line. I don't know where the draw of the line is. We all recognize that some Sandy Hook trutherism or whatever they're calling that is across the line. But the kindest thing I can say about Aaron Rodgers is like people like him with that impulse are like necessary because I know we all understand this. We are being lied to about something.
Sure.
And somebody like the journalistic instinct to like be skeptical all the time and question everything is something that we need to have in society.
Yes, again, like the whole, like, we got to find out stuff is, yes, I embody this.
Sure, but I feel like there's a line that needs to be drawn between curiosity and conspiracy theorist. And to me, what's interesting about seeing Aaron Rodgers over the years is that he very much seems like he falls into the camp of conspiracy theorist. And there are a lot, and there is maybe something to unpack about the psychology of conspiracy theorists, because whether they're QAnon, whether they're Hoteps, there is this large population that seems to just be growing of conspiracy theorists. And what is it in that particular makeup of a person that is driving them that way? Are there things that Aaron Rodgers has in common, psychologically speaking, to a lot of these other people? And maybe that's something we should be looking at and focusing on, because the danger is, especially when these people have voices and platforms, they then just popularize not just their way of thinking, but the anxiety, narcissism, and other things that drive that thinking.
You know, I was wondering about like how Aaron Rodgers in his psychology was going to respond to this. I now am persuaded that he's going to go with the immunized loophole, careful rhetoric. I think why it's right now that I keep on looking at this statement about the Sandy Hook stuff. But I think when it comes to how he got to be this way psychologically, you know, I think he's going to describe at some point, he'll do the thing he always does. He'll complain about being canceled, how he has opinions that are too brave and all that stuff. I can see that happening. It might be happening as we speak right now. But the funny thing about his persecution complex is that Aaron Rodgers has actually been a fascinating experiment, because he used to be beloved. All the people who are his critics now who tend to be loud about it, he was their guy. He was a friend of Dan Le Batard's show. He was in Mina Kimes' home because he wanted to, which is weird, especially now to think about in retrospect, that he wanted to visit her as she was profiling him at ESPN. He was somebody that I admired because it seemed like his brain power was being used to be interesting and thoughtful while also being one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. And the question then for him is, okay, why did he then feel like everybody turned on him? And I think, or why is it, the question might be, why does he feel like he lost that audience? And he would say, I think, because of the woke mind virus, because he said some things that cut too close to the truth, and these people are sheep and they're not awoken and all that stuff. And in reality, I think the answer is you started trafficking in that we cannot possibly even begin to defend. And he never seems to consider that that is actually the answer. He's always looking outward at, people don't get what I am putting down, and therefore it's them and not me.
Hey everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
Have you ever wondered if Chet Holmgren might be a descendant of Abraham Lincoln, or if a UFC fighter could beat an alien in a fight? You might have not, and that's okay. I probably have thought about the UFC one, to be honest. But Shea Serrano and Jason Concepcion from the Six Trophies podcast have. If you love basketball, and more importantly, if you love fun, you got to listen to Six Trophies, where Jason and Shea serve up the biggest moments from all around the NBA with their brand of unbridled joy, banter, and pop culture side quests. Each week, they hand out six pop culture themed trophies for six basketball related activities. Stuff like the Denzel Washington and Training Day trophy, given out to the player or team having the best week around the NBA. Or the Lauryn Hill You Might Win Some, But You Just Lost One trophy for the team or player that just can't get it together. Plus a bunch more trophies for all the good, bad, or just plain head scratching moments from all around the NBA. This playoff season, you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Dan Le Batard.
Amino Hassan.
Stugatz.
Amino Acid.
This is the Dan Le Batard Show with the Stugatz.
All right, Charlotte. Pause up. We're going to play Word Count. This is the game where we ask each other questions and we have to answer the questions in 10 words or less. And Charlotte, how do we show that they're 10 words or less?
Counting on our fingers, baby.
And while playing an imaginary nose trumpet. All right. You know what? I'll lead us off. So Charlotte, team me up.
Okay. Amin, your first question. The Magic rewarded coach Jamal Mosley with a four-year extension that will take him through the 2027-2028 season. Where do you see Mosley and the Magic in the next 4 years?
Depends on if they can get more offensive talent there.
Okay.
So right now, the Magic, one of the great things that Coach Mosley's done since the day he got there was setting the foundation for a great defense and great competitiveness. So even last year when they weren't playing so great, they were in a lot of those games, and they defend at a high rate. This year, they're a top five defense. I believe they were top half of the league last year. Also, if you look at what they did last season, they started terribly. But then they were pretty much 500 after January 1, maybe a couple games under 500.
Yeah.
So some of this was kind of already foreshadowed what was happening this year. This year, obviously, they started hot. They had a soft middle, and now they're closing really strong again. But throughout all of this,
yes,
one thing has remained. This is a team that is in the bottom third in offense overall. So in the bottom third of half-court offense. And
really?
Yes. And they are the worst three-point shooting team in terms of makes. They're second to last in the league in terms of attempts.
No way.
And they're top bottom five in three-point percentage.
Which is crazy because they're fifth in the East.
Yes.
So to be doing that well, imagine
if they had offense, right? So right now, what their offense, their game plan consists of is we're going to defend, we're gritty, we're tough, we're hard-nosed, all that stuff. And then if the game's close, we're trusting Paolo Banchero and Franz Wagner to kind of lift us and carry us. And there are contributions from other people here and there. But by and large, it is a slog of an offense.
Yeah.
So if they can add another transformational offensive player, either on the wing or as a true center, I think this is a team that can contend, and by contend, I mean make it to at least a conference finals within the next 4 years.
Who do you think would be the best addition right now?
It's funny, even though he's not a three-point shooter, I thought DeMar DeRozan would be a guy that they go after at the trade deadline, just because he's a vet. Because the other thing about this team is it's very young. A lot of these guys haven't really been around that much other than Joe Ingles, who's 7,000 years old. So, you know, to have someone who's been there and been on deep playoff runs and been around, but is still very much an accomplished scorer, I thought that could have helped them.
Yeah.
So I thought DeMar DeRozan, but there are other names like that. I'm not married to that one. I'm just bringing that as an example. You need someone who's creative offensively. Mm-hmm. Again, either perimeter or true center, either or, and then obviously a little bit of rind to them.
The future is bright.
Yeah, there you go.
The City of Magic.
From the City of Magic to the City of Swamps.
The swamp.
Drain the Swamp. Washington, D.C. Charlotte with the Virginia Arena deal blocked that would have moved the Wizards out of Washington, D.C. How should Wizards owner Ted Leonsis make amends to fans in the district? Basically, ladies and gentlemen, they had a plan to build a new arena across the way in Virginia, out in the suburbs. This arena, the arena that they play in now, they own. It's in the middle of, in the heart of Washington, D.C., but for whatever reason, money, they want to move it out. That deal got blocked.
And that was with taxpayer money.
Yes.
And now, it was a $2 billion deal somehow.
And now he's got to come back and like, I'm just joking. So Charlotte, how should Ted Leonsis make amends?
Sell the team?
Oh, no! What a monumental suggestion.
Change of capital, that would be. No, I don't really know, to be honest, because this is like, you could say you're staying in D.C. That would be a great way to make amends. You could say we're going to keep.
Is that amends? Or are you like, my bad?
If you invest in the stadium, if you update it, but like, it's a pretty tough one to come back from, because basically you're saying we're going to leave this location, which I think is a great location. When I lived in D.C., I went to games there all the time. It was easy to get to.
It's an amazing location.
Chinatown.
So many restaurants, so many stuff around.
Yeah, exactly. Very accessible.
Subways.
By public transportation.
Amtrak station's not too far either.
No, not at all. Yeah. And they're saying, actually, we're going to put this in the suburbs. Very much like a suburban experience of like, you can drive here and it'll be like a mall used to be. And I just think, I mean, how do you come back from saying that you are going to leave the heart of a city and then it didn't work out?
Can I ask a question, Charlotte?
Yeah.
Because sometimes I feel like I approach things with a certain level of sensitivity mm-hmm. that may border on overly sensitive.
Okay.
But whenever I hear a team that plays location-wise in a great location mm-hmm. in an urban center, say, we need a new stadium and it needs to be there out in the suburbs. Mm-hmm. It screams white flight to me.
I was going to say there is an element of race to this that just, it feels like taking it from the center of a city
mm-hmm.
and putting it in Arlington, Virginia, not just like white, but like very white.
Yes.
It seems coded. How else do you take it?
It reminds me.
I don't think that's too sensitive.
It reminds me of the Atlanta Braves mm-hmm. who played at Turner Field from like 96, which it was a brand new stadium built for the Olympics.
Yep.
And then a few years ago, so basically about 20 years, maybe, you know, less or a little over 20 years, they moved to a new stadium. That new stadium is out in Gwinnett County, which isn't very accessible via public transportation. And also is not Atlanta. That's not Atlanta. Like Atlanta's Fulton County. And Atlanta being a very black city,
mm-hmm.
like Washington, D.C., a very black city, to say, hey, we're going to move the team and we're going to put it out where the white folks moved a long time ago when they left, when they white flight, they fled the city. It feels weird. It's the opposite of what's happened in Detroit, where the team was playing out in the suburbs and they came back downtown to Joe Louis Arena. In downtown Detroit.
Yeah, 100%. And I think that especially when you're talking about such a rich suburb, like, mm-hmm. like, you know, Virginia, that part of Alexandria is unbelievably wealthy. Mm-hmm. You're basically saying these are the types of people that we want to come to these games most easily. These are the people that we're going to take their money and we're going to pander to them.
And there's another part of this, right? The assumption that these moneyed people mm-hmm. would never come into D.C. to come see a game. Like, I feel like sometimes they ascribe the lack of business uh-huh. with, well, it's because we're in the middle of the hood or whatever. Which, by the way, it's not. It's a really nice neighborhood. When in actuality, the reason why people don't come to games is because you've sucked for a very, very long time, Wizards.
And it's easier to move the team than find out how to develop a system of player development and good drafting.
Or actually run the team
Run the team. Yeah. Candace Buckner of the Washington Post, one of my favorite writers and people, we should have her on because she wrote a great article about stadiums in cities and how there's a lot of people starting to, you know, as downtown, especially with the pandemic, became less of a thing and more difficult in terms of people not going to offices, whatever, all these owners saying, like, we want to move.
Yeah.
And she has a great piece on that. So, Candace,
shout
come
out to
on
Candace
the show.
Buckner. Shout out. All right.
Okay.
Last one.
Oh, this is a joint one.
A joint chief of staff.
Yeah.
That happens later, after hours. that's another agriculture weed joke. Here we go. There are multiple errors, Charlotte Wilder, on the Kobe Bryant statue revealed outside of Crypto.com Arena that are to be fixed. How should they reprimand the people that made the mistakes?
Before we do the word count part of this, I just have to say my favorite thing in the world is spelling mistakes in very permanent places. These mistakes are literally written in stone. I think that's one of the funniest things you can do.
All right.
Okay, so how should they reprimand the people?
Okay. Oh, you want me to go first?
You want to alternate words?
Oh, then I have to guess what you're doing.
Yeah.
Okay, all right, go.
You start.
They
should
absolutely
not
allow
them
to
go. No, games.
I was going to say.
What were you going to say?
I was going to say make the other statues.
I'm like, you are banned from Staples. I will never call it crypto.com.
I was going to say you're banned from making these other statues.
Yeah.
Because here's a problem, Charlotte, mm-hmm. right? There's three typos. Two of them were player names. One was Jose Calderon. Mm-hmm. They wrote Calderson. And they're going off of the actual box score, as you can see on your screen. Jose Calderson.
How do you...
It's bad enough that you messed up the name of a player. It's even worse that Jose Calderon played for the Lakers in 2016. All right? The other name was Vaughn Wafer. They wrote Vom with an M. It's almost like the person... was like, Vom.
But also, like, there's some typo stuff, because I'm looking at my computer.
Those are the two names. But then the last part, and this one is the mwah. They spelled decision. Decision. I can't pronounce it, but it's horribly misspelled. And the problem, Charlotte.
Yes.
Isn't that both Vaughn Wafer and Jose Calderon are both former Lakers. You know, shout out to once a Laker, always a Laker, or whatever. Lakers family, Laker Nation, all that crap, right? But the problem is that when you have an undertaking like this, mm-hmm. quite possibly the most important statue they've done, because it's the first posthumous one, I believe, of the players. I don't know if Chick Hearn was probably already there. But like this one is like Kobe's.
Well, it's Kobe.
You could argue Kobe is the greatest figure in the history of the franchise. And that's saying a lot given Magic and Shaq and Kareem and all the other, Jerry West, all the other great players.
D'Angelo Russell.
Yeah, right? Statue forthcoming. But they call him Dangelo because they won't have the apostrophe. It's not just that, right? It's the idea that, okay, I got it. Here it is. This is what we're going to have on the statue. Yeah, it looks good to me. There's no way this was cleared by one person. There had to be multiple eyes that went across this, and they all kind of just gleaned over it and didn't notice. And even if you don't know the players, like, I don't know who this Jose Calderson is. You know how to spell decision, right?
Well, also, you know how to look it up. Like, the most important thing on anything that you're making permanent is it spelled correctly.
How do they fix it?
I don't think that they should be allowed to just redo it. No? I think they should live with their mistake. I think they should remember what they've done. So they should make little plaques where it's like, you know, you used to use whiteout and you would like white it out.
Yeah, the
so it's
strips.
Like it's like bronze whiteout and then it's spelled correctly. So they like and put it in with like four little screws over it so that you can see where the spelling mistakes were.
That's actually pretty cool. I like that one. I also like the joke that you made earlier when we were before the show, which was they should have to chisel in like a red squiggly line under indicating that it is a typo.
That was funny. I did say that.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Dan Le Batard.
Sports.
Stugats.
More sports.
This is the Dan Le Batard Show with the Stugats.
Welcome to the Hockey Show. My name is Roy Bellamy. David Drunk in the Hockey News is right there. There he is. We have Bruce Boudreau today. We also have Paul Lucas of UniWatch. This is why we are wearing jerseys right now. But before we get to that, we will talk about the Florida Panthers. Quick recap. Now, this week, the Panthers had one of those epic comebacks that reminded you of the season prior, which they won the President's Trophy. They won 4-3 after scoring four unanswered goals, three in the third period against the Dallas Stars, David.
That was fun.
That was fun.
That was definitely a throwback type of win. It's not the way Florida wants to play at all. You don't see them falling behind very often, let alone falling behind by three goals.
Right.
But that just goes to show, and you know, it's what Paul Maurice has said kind of over the last couple of months, is they look for ways to play their game and to win games in different ways. And that was a game where, you know, it's not ideal, but you're going to run into situations like that potentially in the playoffs. And they showed they can go on the road, they can withstand that kind of a storm, come back and win.
The power play was excellent in that game, and Sergei Bobrovsky kept them in that game. Two of the three goals they gave up was not his fault. But, you know, his defense has to do a better job in front of him. I know it was a road trip. I know they're tired. I know they came in injured, but they got to do a better job there.
Yeah, well, that's kind of been a big part of Bob's success this year, why he's having such a strong season, is how well they've played in front of him, how they're cleaning up rebounds, second chance and third chance opportunities are getting wiped out of the slot, because that's things that would beat Bob in the past. His rebound control has always been kind of, you know, not his best element of his game.
Yeah, it's been iffy.
But the defense in front of him, just like what it was in Columbus when he was putting up those great numbers there, he's getting great defense in South Florida now. And as long as that continues, this week it was a little flimsy, but as long as that continues on the whole, Bob and the Panthers will be all right.
Aaron Ekblad is hurt. He's going to be out 2 weeks. Evan Rodriguez is day-to-day. Both of them did not play at Dallas. We saw Josh Maher, and we saw Kyle Okposo, who we just picked up at the deadline.
That's right.
Go over their games on Tuesday.
Kyle Okposo plays a very strong, responsible game. Paul Maurice was raving afterwards about how smart he was, how he was engaging on the bench, how he understood the team didn't have it early on, and he just played a very controlled game and basically gave the Panthers what they needed. And that's really why you bring in a guy like Kyle Okposo, a veteran. He's been to the playoffs. He knows what Florida's trying to do. So, yeah, it's going to be a good fit, I think, with him. And in terms of Josh Maher, like, this is just a chance for guys to step up the way they did the first 15 games of the year when Ekblad and Montour were out. You had Mahura stepping in. You had back then Uvis Balinskas played a really good role for the Panthers, and Avler Ekman-Larsson, he's back up on the top pairing. And the Panthers, you know, this is why they have the depth they have, because for situations like this, you want to be able to maintain.
Last night they played the Carolina Hurricanes. They lost 4-0. Sam Bennett got hurt, so he didn't play either. They put Jonah Gajewicz into the lineup to beef up, and they did play physically. There were a lot of hits in that game from the Panthers. They had 37 themselves, but I guess that didn't go. That didn't really go too well against the Carolina Hurricanes.
Yeah, that's kind of a trademark. You'll see the team that hits more generally doesn't have the puck as much, so it's something to keep, you know, I don't want to say keep an eye on, but it's usually kind of a symptom of what happens. But with the Panthers, this is two straight games now where they've gone to Carolina and they haven't gotten a goal. The first one, Peter Kochetkov was amazing, that 45-save shutout. Last night, the Panthers only had, I think, 20-something shots on goal, one of their lowest outputs of the season. So, you know, Paul Maurice, after the game, kind of threw it as a one-off, that he's not worried that it's going to continue. But now they go into this game on Saturday against Tampa, and you know Tampa's going to be pissed because Florida put up a 9 spot the last time they played against them.
All right, now joining us is former NHL coach and current NHL Network analyst Bruce Boudreau. We just came off of the trade deadline, and I just want to know from you, what do you believe is the best move that went down during the trade deadline?
Well, I mean, I think there was a few good moves, but I think the one that, to me, that's going to prove to be the best is Carolina getting Kuznetsov and Gensel. I think it adds to their second line and gives them a bona fide threat other than Aho and company. And I think that's what's you know, that's what's going to make it difficult for teams like Florida. More difficult. I still think Florida's the best team, but I think that Carolina made significant grounds in catching them when it comes to playoff time.
Yeah, they did kind of prove that last night as Kuznetsov scored in the 4-0 win against the Panthers. What did you think about that game? What was your takeaways from the Hurricanes-Panthers game?
Well, the one thing, I think that the Panthers are already in playoff mode, and then, I mean, they allowed one goal against the Rangers. I mean, they shut out somebody last week, 1-0. They win 4-0 last night. They're in playoff mode right now. Whether that's too early to get into that mode, I don't know, because you can only last so long playing that well. But they're going to be. What I saw is, like, Florida's been playing very good against everybody. I thought, and even that game last night was not a 4-0 game to me. But at the same time, I think that they're going to be a significant challenge this year. And if they do end up playing the Panthers, I mean, they're going to readily know that the Panthers beat them 4 straight last year, even though Mr. Brind'Amour refuses to admit it.
Yeah, when you talk about playing a playoff style, you all right over there?
I'm sorry, yeah. We've been talking about that aspect for months now. How could he? How? Why would he say that?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I've lost four straight, and I wish I could have went back and told my owners it wasn't really four straight. You got the playoff dates for those extra two games that, you didn't get the money for those two playoff games extra? Okay. Let me figure that one out.
So when talking about the Panthers and playoff hockey, because I know you said it's hard to play that high level of intensity, but that's kind of what Paul Maurice's crew has been doing from day one, really, this season. So from a coaching standpoint, when you look at the Panthers and you approach playing the Panthers, if you're playing them in the first round of the playoffs, how do you, what's the message to your team? How do you approach a team that just comes at you the way that the Panthers do?
Well, I mean, it's a difficult thing. I mean, because the Panthers can dictate and how to play. They got one of the better penalty killing teams in the league. I think they're in the top 10. They got one of the best power plays in the league. They're going to dictate which, they want a physical game. That's the way they're going to play. And that's why they went out and got Tarasenko, and they got a little bit more depth on their team right now. And because they knew by playing that way, which is playoff hockey, is that they ran into trouble against Vegas because they didn't have enough manpower left. And I think they're going to be able to ramp it up. I think they're just playing the way they're playing right now. They don't have Bennett in the lineup. And when he gets there, he's a physical player. He didn't play last night anyway. And they're missing a couple other guys too. So, I mean, it's, I'm not, the one thing I'm not worried about is Florida. I've picked them to come out of the East, and I still think they're the best team to come out of the East, no matter who has made any kind of progress in their at the trade deadline.
Nice.
We mentioned Rod Brind'Amour, obviously, and Paul Maurice is currently coaching the Florida Panthers to top spot in the National Hockey League right now. Who do you see will win the Jack Adams Award this year for Coach of the Year?
Oh, it's interesting. I mean, because that award is usually given to a team, to a coach that a team isn't expected to be good. Now, the reason I don't think Paul's going to win it is because everybody expected Florida to be where they are, so he's doing what they're doing. I think Vancouver wasn't picked to be where they are, and Rick Tocchet's done a really good job in getting them to where they are right now. So he's going to be the front runner. Edmonton, if they were ever to overtake Vancouver, I think he would win it. I mean, that's when I won it in 2007. It was because our team, when I took over the team, it even didn't coach the whole year there. But I mean, they were in last place, and they moved from last to first. So I think that has a big thing in the voters' minds, like that is doing things you're not supposed to. Like even like if Philadelphia was to make the playoffs, nobody thought they would make it. Tortorella would have a shot. I think Rick Bowness in Winnipeg, even though they had a good team, would be sentimental to be a spot in there because he's been coaching for so long and hasn't had an opportunity to coach a team for a full year as good as Winnipeg is. So those are, I mean, there's a lot of good coaches in the league, a lot of good things done in this league. It's a hard thing to win, but I just think the voters look for that special thing. I mean, last year they gave it to Boston's coach because, I mean, they had a record-breaking year.
Yeah.
And you couldn't deny that. No matter what anybody else did that was good, you couldn't deny that what he did. So, I mean, he got it. But this year, I think they'll give it to somebody who that team wasn't expected to be that good, and they are that good, and this is how they'll do it.
So, Bruce, one of the guys you mentioned as a Jack Adams candidate was John Tortorella. I wanted to ask you about what happened with Torts last week when he got a little upset when the Flyers were playing the Lightning, refused to leave the bench. It was kind of hilarious from my perspective, no disrespect. I just wanted to kind of get your take on what happened and what you thought transpired.
Well, you know, John's excitable. And I think what he was trying to do was just to get the referee's attention to come on over to him.
Yep.
And that was the big thing. And so he was saying, I'm not leaving the bench until until you come over and talk to me. And Wes wasn't coming over and talking to him. And so that was the thing he was getting. And when referees don't do that, I'm telling you, as a coach, all it does, it makes the coach matter, because they just want to talk to him, and yet they go further away. And so then the coach starts having to yell right across the ice to him, and then it gets louder, and then things get heated, and that's why things happen.
I want to take you down memory lane right now. 10 years ago, when you were coaching the Ducks, you were playing the Avalanche, and that game got out of control. And Patrick Roy, who was the head coach of the Avalanche at that time, also got out of control. He went towards you, and there was just one divider. There wasn't like a well for like a reporter or a cameraman. And it was one divider, and Patrick Roy shoved the divider towards your direction. What was going through your mind during that altercation?
I was going, please hold up. Please. I mean, Patrick's a pretty big guy, and I knew he was a rough and tumble kind of goalie, and that had gotten into scraps before. But I looked at him and I couldn't see his eyes. They had rolled back in his head, so I knew he had lost it a little bit. And that was his first game, quite frankly, as an NHL coach, too.
Wow.
And they had won the game. The game was over. I mean, they had won 6-1. And what had happened is, I think he wanted to send a message, and he put his tough guys out there, and they started a little fight. And then he came to the bench, and he was chirping the players on the ice. And Corey Perry, who always gets by the boards there, he had a water bottle, and he was squirting Patrick in the face. And I think that just wound him up. And he came after me, because I didn't even know what was going on, quite frankly. And then my assistant coach said, Bruce, Patrick is screaming at you. And then I just automatically just started protecting my players and started screaming back at him. But when the glass almost came down, I said, please stay up, glass. Please stay up.
Finally, you said the Panthers are coming out of the East. Who is coming out of the West, and who will win the Stanley Cup Final? Oof.
Oh, I wish I had that answer. I'd be in Vegas right now. But I mean,
it could be Vegas again.
I think it could be Vegas, not the way they're playing. If I'm Vegas right now, I'm worried more about making the playoffs than I am winning the Stanley Cup at this stage. But I think good teams, and Dallas isn't playing very well either. So, I mean, Vancouver's been really steady, even though I think when it comes to the playoff time, there's going to be better teams. I think Edmonton is poised, and you've seen them being able to go on long runs, and they're playing much better defensively this year. I think they've got a really good chance at winning the West this year. I mean, the biggest thing out of the teams in the East and the West is getting out of that first round. There's going to be some upsets, I think, and getting out of that first round. But I think it'll end up Edmonton and Florida in the finals.
You can catch him on NHL Network. Bruce Boudreau, we appreciate you joining us today.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, no problem. My pleasure, guys.
Hey everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
Texting privacy policy and terms and conditions posted at textplan.us. Texting enrolls for recurring automated text marketing messages. Message and data rates may apply. Reply stop to opt out. Individual results may vary. Consult a doctor prior to use.
You've lost so much weight. How'd you do it?
I got medical treatment for weight loss through Zelty and lost 50 pounds. I struggled for the longest time, but Zelty makes it easy and affordable to get weight loss treatment 100% online. Zelty providers can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications clinically shown to help people lose weight, like Wegovy, Zepbound, and others.
I've heard those medications can help you lose weight, but aren't they expensive?
Zelty can help get the medication covered by insurance, so it's as little as $0 a month.
What if you don't have insurance?
No problem. Zelty may be able to help you get other GLP-1 medications for 80 to 90% off the price of name brand medications.
I'm ready to start losing weight. How do I get started with Zelty?
Just text.
Text LOSE to 200-300 to get started today with Zelty and see if weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound are right for you. Don't wait. Text now for a link to your exclusive offer. Text LOSE to 200-300. That's LOSE to 200-300. LOSE to 200-300.